From Topps comes the all-new digital card collecting app, free to download from iTunes or Google Play, Star Wars Card Trader.
For the first time ever, collect and trade everything from legendary 1977 Star Wars cards to new cards featuring exclusive content from Star Wars Episode 7, The Force Awakens.
All from the comfort of your mobile devices, Star Wars Card Trader.
These are the cards you're looking for.
Listening to Coffee with Kenobi, you are, with Dan Z and Corey Club, the podcast you're looking for. This is. Yes.
For an entire generation, people have experienced Star Wars the only way it's been possible, on the TV screen. But if you've only seen it this way, you haven't seen it at all.
This is the podcast you're looking for.
We've been waiting for you.
The Force is strong here, even stronger than the coffee.
At last, where have you been?
Welcome to Coffee with Kenobi. Here are your hosts, Dan Z and Corey Club.
Hello, this is Corey Club, and welcome to show number 48 of Coffee with Kenobi, a Star Wars podcast that analyzes our favorite saga in a whole new way. With me is my good friend and co-host, Dan Z.
Hello, everybody. A special shout out to Dennis Keithley, Angela Souse, Neil Lowry, Mediocre Jedi, Mike Winder, Aaron Harris, Mark Suter, Torpedo Ted, Jesse, and Mike Audet for their contributions to our Coffee with Kenobi Patreon page. By supporting our Patreon page, you too can win a coffee chat podcast of your own. Check out our webpage or the show notes for more information. You can also support our show through our Amazon.com, Fandango, Cufflinks.com, and Her Universe affiliate links on the site. Thank you for your generosity to our Coffee with Kenobi family.
In today's show, Scott Murray is back as we discuss our topic for show number 48, The Phantom Menace. Scott helps us complete our look at the six existing films in the franchise as we examine the 1999 film. We will also share our final thoughts on The Force Awakens before we see the film for the very first time, share our plans for the movie, and look back at the Magic Kingdom meetup.
In collector news, we talk with designer Annie Stoll about her amazing Star Wars work, look at Coffee with Kenobi giveaways from Google and Fandango. We also share more of your feedback and introduce our topic for show number 49.
And now, let's see what's brewing in the Star Wars universe this week.
Oh, wait. This is interesting.
You found something.
I'm about to let everyone in on the secret.
Our first news story, obviously, we're about 9 days away from The Force Awakens as is recording this. And it's surreal to me as a fan and as following this film for the last 2 years, really. The Force Awakens will be opening up in just a little bit over a week for us as moviegoers and us as fans. And it's completing a circle. I can't think of the words. I don't know. It's been such an experience and such a trip that... like we were talking earlier with our good friend Scott, and he mentioned, you know, it's like we'll see it and go, okay, we're done. You know, the ride's kind of over for a moment in time. And of course, we'll have tons to talk about after the film, obviously. But you know, gearing up to the film itself, there's so much going on. I mean, merchandise is being pushed out. I was talking to my wife the other day, and she's like, "Where is Star Wars not being, you know, on something?"
Oh,
you know, I've seen it everywhere. Which it's great to have and great to see and so much fun to be able to connect with fans and meet new friends just through Star Wars itself.
It's when you think about our show, when our show started, we knew about what was going on with Star Wars. So as long as we've been doing Coffee with Kenobi, and it's 2.5 years now, we've been having this hype for The Force Awakens, and it's here.
Yeah,
it's here. Like 9 days from the recording, we're going to see a new Star Wars film. And of course, I actually wrote a blog about it that we pushed out recently about how I personally am managing my expectations. And I can't tell anybody else how to do it, or even if they need to. I just know for me, I needed to. And I think part of the reason is the anxiety that is bred from getting excited about this stuff. And I was actually talking about this with a psychology teacher today. And we were talking about the notion of why do we get anxious, like what, you know that experience you get when Christmas is coming and Christmas is here,
Can't sleep.
When it's over, you feel depressed. Like there's sure. A bit of a, you know, you're let down. And why? There are a lot of reasons why. I mean, why you shouldn't is because Christmas is coming back. You have other things to be excited about. I was talking with Deanna about this recently as well, and she said, well, how do you help yourself when it comes to Christmas? How do you avoid letdown for Christmas? And honestly, what I do in my house is I take down everything in the house, all the trees, all the ornaments, all the decorations, and I pack them and I organize them and I put them away and I get like a little bit of a closure. This has become a therapy session, Corey. Thanks for offering for me to put my feet up on the stool. And so for Star Wars, Deanna was like, well, okay, but you know, there are other movies coming out and there's other things you can enjoy and there's other things that aren't Star Wars related that you can get excited about as well. And I was like, well, of course. And she's totally right. So I needed to take a step back because I like hype so much. And now that it's here, you know, a lot of stuff goes through your mind. And I know you were getting a little bit nervous and antsy about it too, because we're like actually making plans about going to see the movie. We're making like actual times. It's not just a pie in the sky thing.
Right.
It's a real thing.
Well, I think that's the case too. I mean, we've talked about this for the last 2.5 years, and we followed this film so closely. I was talking to my wife again about this. Just this is probably the biggest film that I, as a fan, has followed so closely, from production notes to, you know, casting notes to, you know, who's doing this and who's doing that, and just every little aspect of it. But I've enjoyed it, obviously. But it's just been I've been so close to it in my own heart, and just be able to just, I guess, enjoy it, but also, there's times where I've felt overwhelmed. I'll admit it too. Like you said, your blog, you did a good job on your blog. I read it through that, and I was like, it was a fresh air for me to say, okay, I'm not the only one that feels this way, you know. And I felt like, you know, it's hard to put into words, I think, sometimes, because being a podcast, I feel like I'm.
It multiplies your expectations.
It does. It
does. Not only are you excited about the movie as a fan, but you know you're going to talk about it on your show. You're going to write about it. People are going to ask your opinions. And anybody who's a Star Wars podcaster or a Star Wars podcast listener or a Star Wars blogger or a Star Wars person who's a fan on Twitter or anybody who goes to a convention or has interacted with anybody who's a Star Wars fan in general, they're going to want to know your opinion. If you're listening to the show, people in your life want to know your opinion before anybody else's about what you think of The Force Awakens. And there's a bit of a responsibility with that.
There is. Well, I guess,
I mean, it's not like we're curing cancer or being an ambassador to Greece. So I don't know why I'm overhyping it that much. But no, it's important.
But I mean, if you know, wear a Star Wars shirt, or people know you go to conventions and dress up, or, you know, you run a podcast, or, you know, you got a huge collection of Star Wars items or memorabilia or whatever, people know that about you. They're going to come to you as saying, hey, this guy knows a little bit more than me, or they're just a fan of the film and they can, you know, let me in on the secret, you know, a little bit. I've had people approach me who are just casual fans of the films and say, hey, what do you think? You know, you're a big fan, obviously. What do you think, though? Because you're such a big fan. What are you going to do different than maybe, say, other people would do?
It's like a Buffalo Wild Wings culture, because everybody goes to Buffalo Wild Wings because they, even if you don't know the people, you've got something in common. You're interested in this game or this team or this event. And the same with Star Wars. Just like you said, people coming up to you and saying, what do you think? And there's suddenly that commonality. We are social people. We are designed to be social and work together. I talked about the psychology thing, that inherent anxiousness about anticipating the next moment. That goes back to, you know, millions of years. I don't know about millions of years, my math is off, but you're talking about the cavemen. You know, they had to be anxious to say what was coming up next, because they could be dinner. You know, so that's just like part of your DNA. It's part of who we are as individuals, this anxiety, this excitement about what's coming next.
Yeah, exactly. And as just talking about this, when we're counting down the days and the hours and whatnot, and My anticipation builds inside me, and I'm nervous I won't get a good seat. I'm nervous that, you know, I might get sick. I'm nervous that my car won't start, you know, things like that. You know, it's so dumb to think about that, but I think it's our own anxieties. But
it's real.
It's real. Sad. Yeah, but, you know, I'm excited to sit down and just take in the film and enjoy it, and I'm excited to see what will happen. It's been building so much, and it's just kind of a good release to be able to go and experience it for the very first time.
Well, whenever I see a movie for the first time that I'm excited about, and as you said, this one, probably the most exciting one of my lifetime, and I'll tell you about that in a minute why, but I always like when this starts and the scroll starts or the title starts, I always close my eyes and reopen it again and just sort of like give myself like a snapshot of what I'm experiencing and sort of like wake myself up from this little quote unquote dream that I'm having to enjoy. It's just one of my weird little things. So feel free to do that, everybody, when you're watching the movie for the first time. Close your eyes and open them again when you see that Lucasfilm logo and it's just going to hit you like, it's here. It's here. Like, I just got goosebumps saying that now.
Get in the Z zone. Is that what
it
is?
Yeah, the Z zone.
There you go.
No, Phantom Menace, I mean, I was excited for that as I could possibly be. Mm-hmm. But there were a lot, and there were different things. That, like, the internet wasn't the same. I didn't have a voice. I didn't feel in fandom, and I really wanted one. And now I'm very blessed that with this Coffee with Kenobi family, they've given me this opportunity to be able to talk to people, which is such a blessing. I'm so grateful for all of our Coffee with Kenobi family. If you're listening to the show, if you've ever been on our site or social media, you made this possible for me, and thank you for that. And I mean, with the bottom of my heart, you've helped me get excited about this movie in ways I never could have done without all of you, and that means the world to me. Like that, and going with you and being able to talk to people about the movie, those mean so much. But the another reason why I'm more excited about this than The Phantom Menace, you know, everybody's a Monday morning quarterback, I suppose. But to me, there are two words why The Force Awakens is more interesting and more exciting than The Phantom Menace. You know what those two words are?
No.
Han Solo. I'm serious. He's got the weight. It's Harrison Ford's my favorite actor of all time. Mm. If Han Solo's in the film, that means Luke Skywalker's in the film. It means Princess Leia's in the film. It means Chewbacca's in the film. It means Millennium Falcon is in the film. Those trailers and all those things that harken back to the OT, those are what got people who were in Star Wars dormancy because they had some prequel malaise or got, quote, older. I don't know why I keep using the quote all the time. And so it just reawakened fandom. As we've said before, it's reawakened a new attitude about Star Wars. And it's been in merchandise for a long time, but now it's hip and now it's real. And now it makes those cash registers sing and time. And it's different. I think a lot of this is we've got nostalgia, we've got youth, and we've combined it into this amazing new approach to marketing and reinventing filmmaking. Who knew that it could still be done, but Star Wars is doing it.
Well, and you mentioned too your kind of your thanks to the Coffee Kenobi family and just all of fandom itself. I just from doing this podcast, I agree with you on that note. Just meeting new people and just, you know, dipping my toe into fandom and be able to.
And I pushed you in.
You pushed me in, exactly. It's something I can't, you know, take a snapshot of. And it's built on experiences and built on memories and built on friendships. I mean, I constantly talk to new friends just because of just going to Anaheim or we met on Twitter or, you know, just through this podcast. And it has a lot to do with you us becoming friends, just through this whole experience too. And I thank you for that because, as much as we're co-hosts, we're also friends and we appreciate each other in other ways and support each other in many ways. So it's so much that, and it's almost built into this hype and built into this film. It's like everything's kind of coming to a point to where it's like, this is what life is about. That sounds cheesy. And you mentioned, you know, nostalgia, but I think even Star Wars just represents kind of the child in us, the that little piece of thing that everybody looks for, as they get older, even if you're still young, you know, you look back to those younger days, to where things were just free and good. And I think Star Wars does that for everybody. They just look back to that and they think that that was a good time in their life. They can look back and relive that. And this film is that for them, no matter what life they come from, be able to sit down and watch a film. And like you said, enjoy it because we're meeting these characters again and living through, you know, their experiences and choices. And it's something that's going to live with us forever and create new memories from here on.
Isn't it staggering? I mean, it is. I was actually talking to Chad the Chicken Horse the other day, and he was telling me, you know, how he's excited too. And we talk about, even though there are other movies, it's just not the same.
Right.
I mean,
right.
Waiting, you know, 30 years for the sequel to Return of the Jedi, you know, Revenge of the Sith came out in 2005. It's been 10 years. The longest we're going to have to wait for a Star Wars movie is a year. And then we're going to have to wait just 6 months. And that poses a whole other whirlpool of thought and potential excitement slash anxiety.
This kicks it off.
This kicks it off. And we'll never have to wait 30 years for a movie. And it's just, I don't know, this is just so unique. I mean, people have thought about this so much, but think about this. Han Solo is back, and you're going to see it now. Like I'm going to sneeze, and I'm going to see it, and then it's going to be done. I'm going to miss the hype.
That's the thing, too. That's the thing, this day and age we live in. It's everything's so instant. It's changed from waiting, you know, years for movies or music or whatever it may be, to instantly downloading it or instantly catching the latest hype or whatever. So it's now we're gonna have these films come on succession as far as every 6 months or so, and it, you know,
after Rogue that's, One, yeah,
after Rogue One, right? It's weird because it's evolving, it's changing how we take things or how we perceive things,
how we consume
yeah. Exactly. So it's, you know, it's very much the hype, but it's very much the era too. You know, look back, 50 years from now, and know that this is the way it was back then. Back in my day, you know, we had to wait, you know, 6 months for films, and you know, so it's crazy to think about. I know. Who knows what's going to happen? So this is starting a new era too. I think I'm excited for my kids to be able to experience it, and your kids and. And this is starting their Star Wars experience on a whole new spin. I know my kids have seen all the films and love Rebels and whatnot and Clone Wars, but this is their first film that they've been you know born into, in a sense. They can go to the theater and it's brand new and sit on the big screen and relive that movie magic.
Yeah, my 2-year-old knows who Kylo Ren is.
Oh yeah, and all my kids love him.
He actually corrected my wife. Isn't that Kylo Ren? And she just looked at me and smiled. She said, "Oh boy, what have we gotten ourselves into here?" I mean, it's pretty funny. I mean, after we see the movie, maybe I'll decide that I don't want to bombard Mason with Kylo Ren. And that's another thing I'm excited about. And by the way, a quick segue. Thanks again for what you said.
Sure.
This about us and the show. Yeah, we've always been friends, all you know each other and family, but this is added. One of the main reasons I'm excited for The Force Awakens is because of my conversations with you. Everybody else, but particularly you. How could it not be? Because we've been co-hosts through this whole thing, and who knows how long it's going to last. We hope it does for a while. And it's been fun. It's been fun picking your brain and hearing how you put a spin on things. It's helped my fandom, and it's just, and it made me smarter too.
Well, thank you very much, and I appreciate that. And like you said, I reciprocate the pleasures, because it's just the conversation it works into. It's something we, you know, text back and forth daily almost about this and that and the show and what's going on. And it's a way to mix my fandom into my real life and be able to enjoy that with somebody and obviously do the show and be able to have a voice. So I thank you for that.
You bet. It's my pleasure. And there was something else I was going to say, and it was so incredibly important. Totally forgotten what it is.
Off the air, yeah. No, we can hear that part, so.
That's right. So we're excited to bring you a Force Awakens coverage. Later in the show, we're going to announce our next topic, but it's going to be about The Force Awakens.
Yeah. Spoiler alert, yeah.
We can't wait to do that. So let us know your final thoughts before you see the movie. And add a comment on my blog. Post or anything, anywhere you want to, send us an email and join us as we continue this amazing ride and this incredible new venture into being a Star Wars fan and being a really consumer of pop culture at all. Our second news story is what Corey and I are doing specifically for the film. We are going to be broadcasting live from the Carmike Grand Prairie 18 Cinemas in Peoria, Illinois. We're going to the 7 o'clock show because that's the very first show, so of course that's the one we're going to go to. It's the IMAX 3D one, which, you know, to be honest, I don't necessarily care about seeing it in 3D, but if that's the first showing, that's what I'm going to do. And we're very fortunate here because the Midwest Garrison, the 501st, reached out to me quite a bit ago and said they were doing some stuff, some promos at the theater, and they wanted to be a part of it in the broadcast live. So we were able to make that work. We're going to be there. We're going to be getting people's reactions before the movie and after the movie, and it's going to be a pretty good time. We're thrilled to be able to be in the theater and do this and appreciate the 501st and Carmike Cinema's asking us to do this. So undoubtedly, if you're listening to this, you've already got your tickets. I know people are spread throughout the globe. But if in any way you can be there and just hang out with us, that would be awesome too.
Absolutely. And I think, it's going to be a crazy wild night. I think it's exciting that the Midwest garrisons will be hanging out with us. I mean, just hanging out with those guys alone is fun and talk to them and see their thoughts and the costuming. Man, I'm always impressed by their craftsmanship and the way they put their stuff together and the professionalism with them too. So it's, they did a great job with that. So it's, the other thing too is, this is it, man. I even just talking about this and making our plans, and we were talking about what time to get to the movie theater and get there some extra time, and obviously getting some equipment ready, and being on our toes as far as interviewing folks and having questions ready and stuff. So it's nerve-wracking for me, I think, as just anticipating the film, knowing we're going to see within a matter of a few hours or so in that time period. So
go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, if any folks want to come out and check us out in the local area, you're more than welcome to come hang with us.
In the week of Celebration Anaheim, I had so much trouble sleeping that week. I was like nervous. I was excited. I was had all these things going through my mind. I wasn't really worried about last minute plans because I feel like we had things ironed out pretty well, but I think I'm going to be like that before. It's going to be like a little kid on Christmas Eve, isn't it?
Yeah, it's, I remember seeing Phantom Menace. I think I saw it by myself. I don't know if it was...
You definitely didn't see it with me because you were not a twinkle in my eye at that point.
No, and I think it was... I don't think it was opening weekend, but then I went and saw the midnight show of Attack of the Clones and took my then-girlfriend, or my then-girlfriend, wife now... And we were trying to watch the films ahead of time. The story's been told before on our show, but that was a little more of what we'll anticipate for this. I think, obviously a full house, a lot of folks being, having a good time and, excited and whooping and hollering. And it's not necessarily the
you're gonna whoop and holler. I don't know if they allow that in this theater.
So it's interesting because I go to films, try to stay away from crowds and stuff like that to go and. Able to,
I actually didn't know that about you.
Yeah, well, if I go with a group of friends, then it's no problem, or but I mean, it's either it's odd hours or it's an odd day of the week. Just I don't know. Just I'm weird, strange like that. But this is just a different beast in itself because it's opening night. People are excited, and it's gonna be crazy. I mean, then seeing it in 3D, like you said, is not my cup of tea. But it's the first showing. We gotta go see that one. For our next news story, Danny had the privilege of going to Disney a few weeks ago around Thanksgiving and had a great meetup. Speaking of meetups, meeting fans and friends, I didn't get a chance to go. I was super jealous, but the minute I got the text saying you're doing a live Periscope recording, I was like, oh, I'm getting on this. This is awesome. I'm gonna be the fan this time. It's so much fun. So,
what was that like?
It was interesting. It was fun to be able to, I've done a couple of Periscope things, but this was, obviously just on meeting people that I know. So everybody in the group there, Aaron Harris for the first time, face to face, if you call it that, and it was cool because.
You think I was a celebrity?
You act like a celebrity. You're spot on, dude. There was like paparazzi in the background and whatnot. So, but it was cool because like technology is such a cool thing to have to be able to connect this way in our day and age and bring this type of media to fans and those following us and folks jumping on and checking us out. And plus the meetup itself was cool because we tweeted about it and had some other things going on and you set it all up and kind of got it organized with Aaron there. I want to know though your experience of doing that, because that's something we don't necessarily do a whole lot.
Yeah, not as much as we would like. It was sure. It was wonderful. I mean, it all worked out. The main thing that was I was super excited about was I got to meet Aaron face to face for the first time. And the meetup was on Friday, but on Wednesday I was at downtown Disney now called Disney Springs, and Aaron and I hung out and we toured Jack Lindsay's bar area, the Indiana Jones theme.
Oh yes, I'm so jealous, man.
Restaurant place. It was cool, to be honest. If you didn't know it was Indiana Jones themed, you would have no clue.
Yeah, I wondered about that.
Very small, subtle Easter eggs. It's a beautiful location, really small, and
it looks
good.
Great
place to have a conversation. So we hung out. That was awesome. He's even cooler than he is online, and that's thanks to him because he's so awesome. So, and then the meetup was amazing because I was excited. I was outside and I watched the thing where Anna or Elsa lights up the castle for Christmas time.
Oh, cool.
As soon as I was over, I heard someone say, "Hey, Dan," and it was his name was Gian, and he does all the photography and the video stuff from Star Wars Weekends that he let Aaron use for his post the past couple of years. So I got to finally meet him, and he's such a great, enthusiastic guy. He really knows his stuff. And David was there, and John, and Robert, and Jacob, and they're all awesome. And we met Robert at Celebration, so it was cool to hang out with him again and meet his little boy. But I got to, as I said, Aaron, and we got to meet Sandra. Sandra, is Geek Chick online, and she's got a good passion for Star Wars and a good following, and that was really neat. So it was a small, awesome group, and I didn't expect there to be a giant amount of people because it was the day after Thanksgiving, and it was at the Magic Kingdom. It's not like you can just get up and do that. We were just in a very fortunate spot where that could happen. It was very fun. The Periscope was fun. It was fun interacting with you through Periscope, even though you weren't there. So we got a kick out of that. And then it was great. It was great. And we also got to do the premiere of the Christmas with Kenobi sweatshirt, too.
Yeah, you're rocking that, too. I saw that in the Periscope there. I'm also interested, too, to note, I mean, just the presence of Star Wars. You've been to Disney World numerous times. Mm-hmm. And obviously, everybody knows Star Wars is there. There's Star Wars Star Tours. And then, there's little shops and stuff like that. But, now that the Disney owns this, in the park itself, walking around, is there other things? Is it like a subtle thing and it's just, regulated to one park? Or is it like a full-blown, here's a movie coming out and it's all Star Wars stuff?
I think the answer to that is yes and no. I mean, when you're walking in the parks, I mean, the Jungle Cruise is still a Jungle Cruise. Pirates is still Pirates. Sure. It's not like Captain Jack Sparrow has a TIE fighter tattoo or anything like that. But when you, there are little things like on the buses, the little advertisements for different movies and things. They have The Force Awakens there.
Yeah.
The monorail black. It's called monorail black because there are, I think, six or seven monorails. They all have different colors, and the black one had Force Awakens overlay on it. So I got some pictures of that. I was in the departure area for the monorail, and the Force Awakens one showed up, and I was so excited. So I jumped over this thing, and I went over there to take some pictures with it, and I did. And I held up my phone to do a selfie with BB-8 behind me on the monorail. Mm-hmm. And as soon as I hit click, the monorail went, phew. So what I'll
a whoosh.
But I still got to see it up close, and that was pretty neat. But the main time, or the place where you see it, is in all the merchandise shops. And Star Tours, Endor Vendor, well, I guess it's Tatooine Traders now. It has, of course, it's all Star Wars stuff, but they had Watto's Grotto, which is in the back behind the car stunt show, which is going away pretty soon. And all the main shops are Star Wars stuff everywhere. In the world of Disney, at Disney Springs, which is the biggest Disney gift shop in the world, in the middle of the store is a bunch of Star Wars stuff. And then in all the other separate rooms, there's like mugs or jewelry, or there's a ton of purses and wallets and dresses and sweatshirts and hats. And it was pretty cool. And I certainly bought a few things here and there, but it was fun. It was really fun, a good way to get excited because you've got, again, Christmas and Star Wars and Disney. Those are good combinations. And then to cap it off, right before I left, I got to go on Star Tours again, which I've been on Star Wars a million times, but I got to see the Force Awakens thing.
Now, did you only ride it once, or was it multiple times?
I only rode it once because I had fast passes, and literally in 45 minutes, I interviewed Ashley Eckstein, I ran to Star Tours, I ran to get something to eat, and because it was such a hurry, I wanted to run through the Osborne Lights, which is wall-to-wall people, because this is the last year they're doing it. I grabbed two Mickey Mouse gingerbread cookies and I got on a bus and drove for 18 hours.
Oh,
so
boy.
I didn't have a lot of time to do that in 45 minutes. But I also got to hang out with Nabil from the Wolfpack.
Oh, yeah.
And we talked with him at Celebration. And man, is he awesome. So I got a lot of cool Coffee with Kenobi stuff with him and talked to him. And he and I rode the Great Movie Ride together and got to see some of the new Star Wars stuff that's in that final film when you exit the Great Movie Ride. But I want to go back to the Ashley thing. That was awesome. We set that up a month or two ago. And she had a long line, and it was a long line because she takes her time with everybody. She talks to everybody. She takes pictures. She's very gracious and generous with her time, and such an impressive person. I got to hang out with her and David, her husband, for a little bit. And the interview we heard for episode for our 151st show, the live Walt Disney World TWK meetup, and got to talk a little bit with her, and she recorded some stuff for us, which we're going to reveal later. But that's very exciting. There's definitely, besides all the Force Awakens stuff, Coffee with Kenobi's got something really, really, really cool coming out that I think everybody's going to really enjoy. But much more on that later.
Han Solo, Rebel Soldier, Lando Calrissian, and Bespin Guard, each sold separately. From Star Wars, The Empire Strikes Back Collection, new from Kenner.
Looking? Found someone you have, I would say,
Your lightsabers will make a fine addition to my collection.
For our first bit of collector news here, we had to have Annie Stoll on, who is this amazing, gifted, Grammy-nominated designer. If you've seen the Christmas sweater on Think with Darth Vader, which Bloom, this is actually how this whole thing started, didn't it, Annie? Like us ending up chatting and you coming on the show. She's an amazing talent, and we're happy to have her on Coffee with Kenobi. Welcome, Annie.
Oh, my gosh. Well, thank you guys so much for having me. I'm so excited.
You bet. We're excited, too. The way this all happened, and I just tease it, is that I posted a picture on Twitter recently because my friend Tom and I got the Star Wars Christmas sweaters from ThinkGeek, and these are actually legitimate, awesome sweaters, like real sweater material, you know, something you might find at like the Gap or something like that as far as the material and the quality. And Annie saw the picture, and we started having a conversation. She's a huge Star Wars fan, a great person, and aww, we're happy you're having a cup of coffee with us.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And I actually am.
That's perfect. That's perfect. So tell us how you kind of got involved with creating these amazing designs for Star Wars.
Well, actually, I was doing freelance for Lucasfilm, and the long story short of that is I actually crashed a portfolio review at New York Comic Con a couple years ago. It was for pencilers and inkers, and I'm just a big Star Wars fan, and I figured, you know, they have to use graphic designers and illustrators, so, you know, why not? And the art director who was there was Troy Alders, and he saw my stuff, and it kind of turned into like an instant job interview where he was, you know, asking me about my design heroes and, you know, what I was interested in, because my day job was actually like a graphic designer for music. And so I think that, you know, he saw that I had music sensibilities, merchandising experience, and thought, you know, we could really use her her voice to maybe apply to Star Wars stuff. And I was just over the moon because, like I said, I'm like super into Star Wars and I know the whole nine yards. And so I did a bunch of like little odd job freelance assignments for them. I did some stuff for Clone Wars and some stuff for Darth Vader. And one of the assignments I ended up getting was for the holidays. I did stuff for Christmas, Valentine's Day, Easter, you name it. And I had pitched basically a series of ugly Christmas sweaters. And I think I pitched about 8 ideas and they took 7 of them. So that was super exciting. And they picked the really nerdy ones too, which I was really excited about.
Well, it's the only way to do it. So did you do both the red and the green one?
Just the Darth Vader that you see on ThinkGeek, but there's several other, there's a bunch of Yoda ones out there. Merchoid right now has a whole bunch of them, as well as uglysweaters.com as well. My sister actually made a spreadsheet of where you can find everything. And this year there's stuff in Hot Topic, Nordstrom, and ModCloth.
How awesome is that?
Yeah, that's great.
It's just crazy to me because, I mean, I love Christmas and I love Star Wars and I'm a big dork about it. I went to New York Comic Con this year and the Hallmark booth actually had a display of cups that had my design on them. And I was just like, oh my gosh, like no way. Like, this is just too cool. And I ended up talking to the lady who was at the booth, and it turns out that she was one of the like higher ups there that like decided, you know, what went on what items. And she told me that there's a Darth Vader, I guess a little ornament where he's wearing an ugly sweater, and part of that sweater is my design. And I was just like, no way. It's too cool.
I just saw that ornament today again.
Yeah.
Good for you. Good on you. That's fantastic. And also, people who love Rebels, and I would assume that people listening to the show do love Rebels, the Sabine My Rebels sketchbook, that's you too, isn't it?
Oh my gosh, yeah. That was like one of the coolest things I think I've ever worked on.
Tell us about that too. And Sabine, I'm assuming with the talent that you have, I'm assuming that Sabine is someone you've gravitated towards as well.
Oh yeah. I absolutely love Star Wars Rebels. Dare I say it's like my favorite Star Wars thing. Like I absolutely love it. And I knew Star Wars Rebels was going to be coming out and I was super stoked. It's really funny because before Star Wars Rebels even came out, I played this sort of like D&D type game with my friends where it was like Star Wars version. And they were like, make up your ideal Star Wars character. So I made this artist who was a demolitions expert, like no joke. And then when I saw that Sabine was a character, I was like, dude, she's perfect. And because my art director at Lucasfilm, Troy, had known the work I had done, you know, on these ugly sweaters and various other like designs I did for him, when Studio Fun had pitched to Lucasfilm like, hey, we want to make a Sabine book, he immediately thought of my style and he contacted me and asked me if I would be interested in doing the drawings as Sabine, and I was like, yes.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it was super fun. And the author of that book is Dan Wallace, and he is super cool.
Yeah, he's a rock star too.
Yeah, and I got to meet him at New York Comic Con too, and I like almost died because, you know, like I have like the Jedi Path and like all these cool books that he's made.
So I'm going to get a little technical on you there, Annie. Sure. I'm a graphic designer as well. Obviously, you've got some really worked some great people, and I'm like, wow, I'm my mind's blown. So, I'm curious on your strategy and how you kind of go into a project. So, you know, like you said, people know you as far as your style goes. So what do you go as far as your style and approaching some of these other projects? You know, and as a designer, I mean, and as a geek too, it's like, I feel like if somebody's approached me with a Star Wars project, I'd be like, oh my gosh, I would know where to start. So where, I mean, you know, where do you start and where do you pull from?
Yeah, I will. This is probably be kind of a long answer, I guess. I'll do my best. I mean, as far as process, and as far as my style and my voice, I think that that's something that's always kind of ever changing for me, which is kind of why I relate to someone like Sabine so much, because, you know, like a character like Sabine is constantly, you know, experimenting and finding her voice and seeing what's around her world. And I feel like I've always been a little bit like that. Like I don't have one mode. There's a lot of different kind of things I can do, lots of different ways I can remix, you know, my style, or, you know, if I see elements I want to pull in. And so I usually try to look at it, you know, project by project, and, you know, ask myself, you know, what does the client need or what does the project itself want? I had this really awesome professor in when I was in college that used to talk about type like it was kind of a person. Like she would be like, what does the type want? You know, what is it thinking? And it's actually kind of a cool way to approach it, where you kind of get yourself out of your head and what you want to say and start thinking about, you know, what does this project need? Like what can you bring to help, you know, your client along? Sometimes I think, you know, things might be a little more rigid or a little more strict in what you can do. And what I've always found working with Lucasfilm is that they are just so awesome. They really just are like, we want to see you do your thing. And now that I'm like an art director at Sony Music, like I will do that with other artists. You know, I will say, listen, I chose you for this reason. I know that you can do this way. I'd like to see you do your thing. And that's really cool. It can also be really scary because it's kind of like this big, you know, open question. But maybe going back to Star Wars and maybe relating it back, you know, specifically to something like the sweaters, you have to think sometimes a little bit not in super fan mode because it's really easy. Yeah. You want to put in all the hidden Orbash and all like the hidden kind of fun stuff, which I did with Sabine because you could do that with her. But when it comes to like, you know, merchandising for the general public, you do have to think a little bit in terms of what is going to be marketable to a larger audience. Sometimes you can put a little wink and a nudge in there and that's awesome. But it's also important to think in terms of, you know, what's the assignment, you know, for the sweaters, it was, you know, be a dorky sweater. So, I mean, there's one floating around there. I've seen, I think one vendor last year had it, which was a Hoth one, which has like the generators and the whole nine yards. And that's kind of my little wink. But, you know, as far as like thinking about major characters that people want to see, like, okay, Vader, everyone, you know, either loves Vader or loves to hate Vader. So, you know, what can I do to make it feel really vibrant?
That's great. That's cool, because it's, like you said, is, you know, you approach it with your own style and your own voice and the way you would do something. It might be totally different when, way somebody else does it. And I think it's so cool they chose you to do some of this stuff, because it's a collaboration of two of, you know, obviously your favorite things to do. And, and you seem like you just really come with a real professionalism, and you have come across as an awesome person to talk to. And I can't imagine, I can't imagine, just like, I think it's even on Lucasfilm's part, and those folks, that be able to go out and seek out that help, or seek out those folks who are excited by ideas and looking to broaden their horizons. You know, like you said, taking on something that's maybe over their head, and be able to say, you know what, I'm just going to approach this with, you know, dead on, just be able to excitement and just see where it goes, you know. And I can see where you're going with that, as far as, you know, as my approach to some of the stuff that I've done too, and people approach me with different stuff and be able to set a level ground. So kudos to you and great job.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, I mean, they're really cool to work with, and you know, it's just over the moon. It's really cool when you get to collaborate with people that are on the same page, because, you know, my experience is that they're all a bunch of fans too, and they're, you know, they're really cool. When I got nominated for the Grammy, I spent my last $200 and went out to LA to go to the whole shebang, and I told Troy that I was going to be there, and he said, "Well, come visit us at Lucasfilm." So I actually got to go, like, hop over to San Francisco and see them, which was the coolest thing ever. And, you know, getting to meet some of the people that worked there, you know, behind the scenes, it really solidified to me too that, like, you know, they're all just so cool. They're so nice, and they're really into it too. Like, they want to see it succeed as well.
Yes.
You know, they're not some weird corporate people sitting in a room, like, being like, "Oh, what can we do next?" Like, they're excited, and that's awesome. Like, you want to, as a, you know, artist, work with other people that have that enthusiasm.
Yeah, I hear you, and I can definitely echo those sentiments. I've talked quite a bit about, I went to Lucasfilm this summer too, because I blog for StarWars.com.
I know. That's cool.
Yeah, and it's pretty neat, because you're talking about a lot of great people who are just the kind of people you could literally have a cup of coffee with, and whether you're talking about Star Wars or something geek-related, or just your families and your personal views of the world. They're real people too. And I think that personifies why we like Star Wars, because not only in Lucasfilm, but in the fan community, there's a lot that we have in common. And I think that speaks volumes of why this saga is so successful.
Oh yeah, for sure. And I mean, like, you could be any age and you'll find something, and you can have seen it a million times or only, you know, seen it a few times, but you're going to find something new every time.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And speaking of finding something new every time, we have our five questions that we ask each brand new guest on Coffee with Kenobi to find the commonality they have with one another. So we're going to hit you with these, Annie, if you're all set.
Okay, let's do it.
Good, good. First one is, what is your favorite Star Wars movie?
Okay, so I guess the best one is Empire Strikes Back, but my favorite one is A New Hope.
Very good.
Good answer. So your favorite Star Wars character?
Oh, man. I guess now it would be a tie between Sabine and Hera, but before Star Wars Rebels, it was Shaak-Ti.
Really?
Nice.
Yeah. Oh,
that's cool.
I love the Togruta. And then I guess then we're going maybe like Ahsoka, and then maybe like Han Solo, and then I'm just going to talk for another hour.
What day of the week is it? Yeah.
Yeah.
So what is your favorite line of dialogue or film moment?
Oh, gosh, this is so hard. My brother and I play this game, and we wait in long lines where we just quote as many Star Wars things as possible. And of course, I'm like blanking out. I mean, I always like Nerf Herder. It's pretty awesome.
So if you collect, what is your favorite Star Wars collectible that you own?
Let's see. When I was little, I had this Millennium Falcon that had different phrases, and it was sort of like a memory, but with like dumb Star Wars quotes. But I think now my favorite collectible is, I have a little baby Sabine Lego, which is the cutest thing ever.
Nice. So what particular messages or themes about the Star Wars saga resonate or speak to you?
Ooh, this is a great question. I think the overall sort of good versus evil has always spoken to me. And I know that might be kind of cheesy, but, you know, I love that whole, the whole mess of it, the whole, you know, the good guys versus the bad guys, and, you know, there's drama, and, you know, maybe some people mess up in between, but the fact that everyone is intrinsically good, even, you know, this guy that's your terrible father can turn into a good guy, is a great message, you know, of hope and redemption.
Well said. And that's probably one of the reasons why A New Hope is your favorite, because there is that that eternal hope and optimism that things can always get better, and not judging someone by the surface, because there's more to them than what the eyes can see. So,
yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Well, Annie, I'm so glad that we were able to make this happen, have you on for a quick cup of coffee. We'll have to have you on later, now that we know that you're such a big Star Wars Rebels fan, which I guess makes sense when I look at your resume. Anyway.
Oh gosh, I'll never shut up.
No, that's good. That tends to be a strong thing in podcasting. So we appreciate you coming on, and where can fans reach out to you if they want to see your great work, ask you a question, or just say hello?
Sure. Well, always talk to me on Twitter. I love hanging out with everybody. My Twitter handler is @AnniStOLL. Yeah, I've got a Tumblr that's Squid Salad, but talk to me on Twitter. It's more fun.
Very good. Yeah, I agree. It is. And I'm thank you so much again for coming on. We will put a link to all of your fine work and your Twitter account on our show notes. So Annie, have a wonderful evening. Thank you again for being a guest on Coffee with Kenobi.
Oh, I'm so excited. Thank you, guys.
Next bit of collector's news has to do with kind of a Coffee with Kenobi giveaway. We had recently had put in, it was a quick giveaway for the cardboard, Google Cardboard viewer, droid viewer from The Force Awakens. There's quite different ones they had. They had like four different versions of it using the Star Wars app. And I kept getting little notifications on my phone saying that the Jakku spy feature is available, and I was like, what is this? I hadn't heard of it, because like you, Dan, we talked about this multiple times. We're trying to stay clear as far as we can of Force Awakens stuff, and when I see Force Awakens, I kind of immediately kind of make it a blur in my mind a little bit to keep on rolling or check it out. So this was kind of one of those things, and I'd heard about Mike Pilot was trying to track one of these down from his feed there. And then I kind of got involved as far as, interested in Verizon, because I'm a Verizon customer as well. So like, oh, I can go pick one of these up and whatnot. But as far as what we did for our giveaway, we kind of had like going and getting online and checking this out. Unfortunately, the giveaway from us is over. It was over. Well, it'd be this time yesterday. So unfortunately, that's over. But can you tell us about these viewers, Dan?
Yeah, the giveaway was the 10th, and the lucky winner should be receiving theirs very, very soon from Google. But Google reached out to us to tell us about these Google Cardboard viewers, and if you're not familiar with them, you can go to the link on our show notes. They're pretty neat. It's a cardboard box, a good sturdy cardboard box, and there are four different ones. There's BB-8, there's Kylo Ren, there's Captain Phasma, and there's a First Order Stormtrooper. And they had a very, very small amount of them. You can only get them if you are a Verizon customer. So you had to go to the stores, and they left, and they were free for people who were Verizon members, but they left stores really, really quickly. I guess there are all kinds of reports of people going in and asking that, and he left, and people just laughing. So I think they flew really, really quickly. So the only way to get these is if you are a Verizon customer and you go into the store, as I mentioned, and Google was kind enough to send me one to kind of play with and look at. And you take your, and it's got a, you take it apart from the top, and you bend it back, and you slide your phone in. There's a little slot there, and you open up the Star Wars app, and it asks you to calibrate it, and you do. And then it's like, it's virtual reality, and you, if you use your headphones, which they recommend, you look around, and it's hardcore 100% virtual reality. And I saw the planet Jakku, and I saw a plane or a ship down, and then BB-8 was rolling towards me, and it was only like a minute long, and they're updating them with other ones every couple of days or so. It's stuff that I guess it takes place right before the movie opens. Okay. And it's really, the technology is incredible, and just the fact that they're doing this with cardboard, and there's a special lens in there.
Interesting.
It's pretty neat. It's a fun game. It's a nice novelty. I haven't even looked on eBay, but I'm sure they're going for a hefty sum. But they're all well done.
Yeah, I've seen this before. I've seen a similar viewer, a cardboard viewer. A friend of mine had a coworker I had with me, and it showed it to me. Similar to the virtual reality, kind of like you're putting your eyes into like one of those frame by frame viewers. What do you call those from like the little discs?
Yeah.
As a 3D viewer or something like that. I don't know. That's what reminds me of kind of that old style. Viewmaster, that's what it is, yeah. So that's what reminds me of kind of an updated version of that. But just from your explanation there, it reminds me of there was a Google you could ride Ray's speeder, I think it was. You could speed through Jakku, and it was similar to that. You could kind of look around and things like that. It was through Facebook, I think. Had the like a kind of a quick little video, 1 minute video of doing that. So I mean, that's pretty cool. And I'll have to check this out and borrow yours and kind of experience it for myself.
For our next collector news story, we have another contest, another giveaway that's going on, and that is one that is going on through December 18th. And that is a $25 gift card from Coffee with Kenobi and Fandango.
Yeah.
They have this series of, it's cool. They have this series of collector cards for The Force Awakens. Every week they're revealing a new one. They're giving free movie tickets with a gift card purchase of $75 or more. And you can actually go to Fandango with the code JollyTKT. And that kind of helps us out as well. But that's going on through December 25th. But as far as immediately concerning our Coffee with Kenobi family, we're giving away a $25 gift card to one lucky winner. And what you need to do is you need to follow us on Twitter at Coffee with Kenobi and use the hashtag CWKFandango. And there's a link in the show notes if you want to get the actual capitalization, the C, the W, the K, and the F are all capitalized. Or you could write a review in iTunes using the hashtag CWKFandango. And the reviews in iTunes count as two entries. The review or just putting it, the hashtag on Twitter counts as one. So you can get up to three entries. And the 18th, we're going to get our winner. And you will, if you win, if you're fortunate enough to win, you're going to get this. And you'll be able to see The Force Awakens courtesy of Coffee with Kenobi and Fandango. That's kind of nice.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. I mean, just add it to, obviously, if you're not seeing it yet, obviously you can see it for the first time or see it for the 10th time if that's your thing. Or see something else. You know, there's all kinds of stuff coming out. So,
There is.
Well, there's other films, yeah. Well, I realized today there's another Chuck Bunks movie coming out.
Oh, yeah.
And my kids were like, oh, that looks so cool. And I was like, guys, what do you want to see, Chuck Bunks movie or Star Wars? So I go, Star Wars, of course. But it was kind of funny. But it's a fun giveaway for us to kind of promote our affiliates and those who work with us and then give back to our listeners and fans. So good luck.
Hey, it's Dan Z.
And Corey Club.
From Coffee with Kenobi, and we are excited to let you know about the Star Wars Card Trader app from Topps.
Yeah, Dan, you remember those cards that came out in 1977, the good old days? Well, they're back again. Yeah, so it's the Star Wars Card Trader app. It has them all, as well as fantastic images from The Force Awakens, The Clone Wars, Rebels, and much more.
Absolutely. You've got your favorite characters, memorable scenes, you've got key moments. It's all there. You get credits every day for free from the app, which is available from iTunes or Google Play. Open packs from the cantina, trade with your friends, and enjoy these amazing Star Wars memories as you take your first step into a larger world.
There are so many different sets to choose from also, and there's so many great cards to chase. There's special inserts, there's rewards for completing sets and variants. It's everything you love in collecting from a galaxy far, far away.
The Star Wars Digital Card Trader Collecting App from Topps.
These are the cards you're looking for.
Luke, you're going to find that many of the truths we cling to depend greatly on our own point of view.
I must be allowed to speak.
You've taken your first step into a larger world.
Our topic for show number 48 is Star Wars Episode 1, The Phantom Menace. Scott Murray returns as we finish our recap of the six existing Star Wars films. We will look at what worked in The Phantom Menace, as well as an examination of the legacy it left behind and powerful storytelling elements present. Welcome, as always, to Mr. Scott Murray.
Hey, everyone. It's good to be back.
Well, thank you. I think you now, actually, you probably had it before, but I think you have the most appearances. I think you've been on as much as Corey has.
Wow, okay.
No, probably definitely not. But, yeah, we're always happy to have you. We appreciate your insights. And we have enjoyed you being with us. We're now, guys, we're just literally, as we're recording this, we're a week away, a little over a week away from seeing The Force Awakens, and this is a great capstone. I was always hoping that we could go through the six existing films that are out there now, and you've been with us every step of the way. We appreciate that so much. So, Scott, we'll start with you and your overall impressions of The Phantom Menace. And before you go on, I want to make sure that our listeners know we're not interested in prequel bashing. We're not interested in bashing The Phantom Menace. We know it's not a perfect film. We know it has its foibles. That's been talked about so much. It's been talked about for, you know, since 1999, and we're not interested in that. And Scott addressed it beautifully in a blog for Coffee with Kenobi recently, which will be in our show notes. And Scott actually has a great insight into The Phantom Menace as well.
Yeah, I actually, before we recorded today, watched The Phantom Menace again. And I also, with, you know, the release of The Phantom Menace, people are already looking back to the last time we were all getting excited about a Star Wars movie. And I saw this video of this news, I guess it was a news story at a local news station, and they were talking to people that were all waiting in line the day of, ready to go in and all their excitement, and then interviewed them all as they all came out. And almost all of them, I'd say all but one, talked about how they loved it and how much they thought it was a great Star Wars movie or a good Star Wars movie and what they liked about it. And that was the day they saw it. And I just wonder how many people were like that and then maybe changed their mind a little bit down the road. Because I think the bashing got to be so popular that the whole Phantom Menace is a bad movie started to take on a life of its own.
It became like a high school clique.
Yeah, and honestly, you know, and I think that especially impacted people that hadn't seen it yet that were hearing that and then go into it with kind of a different mindset than just going in there excited to watch and see what happens.
Yeah, you and people who went, well, I better stop myself. I'm going to break my rule. Corey,
if you don't like a movie, that's perfectly okay.
Absolutely.
But it's also perfectly okay if people do, and nobody should tell you that it's a bad thing that you like a film.
That's right.
And it's the out of control bashing for the sake of doing it that's gotten kind of silly over the years.
Not only has it gotten silly, but it's really nobody's business how someone chooses to spend their passions as long as they're not hurting themselves or somebody else.
Right.
There you go. I got all didactic on you. All right. Corey, go ahead, Ben. Your overall impressions of The Phantom Menace.
Yeah. It's interesting. We're talking Phantom Menace right now. And like you said, we're leading up 9 days away from The Force Awakens. I have these same feelings I did back in 1999, you know, when the film came out. And as a fan, you get so excited because it's a new film. It's the pinnacle of you know, its creativity of having a new Star Wars item. I think too, as fans got excited, you know, technology was progressing. The internet was kind of, it's taking off and really going places. So it was in an age of newness. And you know, even along with filmmaking too. And I think as a film itself, it was kind of looking to explore new ground and lay some new characters in there, but yet going back and retelling old stories in quote unquote Star Wars, you know, saga itself. We were looking to, you know, journey into a time we had never seen before as far as, you know, filmmaking goes, as far as Star Wars goes. And, you know, I don't think anybody knew what to expect, because it was really secretive. Nobody knew what the story was of Anakin kind of in that time period. And, you know, here we are again, kind of in the sense for episode 7, going that in this next time period, not knowing what's going to happen next. So I had the same kind of feelings going into The Phantom Menace in episode 1. But the film itself, I think, overall impressions for me, going in and see it, I was going along for the ride and enjoying it. And like you said, Scott, you know, folks going in and seeing it and coming out were like, oh, it was great because it was just more Star Wars, more fun, more excitement, more characters, more lightsabers and bad guys. And, you know, it was so much good stuff to it because I think that outshines the bad stuff. You want to look at it and, you know, I won't bash any film, but I think every film has, its good parts and bad parts. And, mm-hmm. you know, I think to center on this film as a failure, I don't think it's true because there was joy in it because there's so many good things that have come out of this, as far as characterization and, you know, growing storylines and just the way George Lucas told his story. Over the years, I've gone back and watched it and had more appreciation for it because of even my own kids. So it has its failures, I guess, in some sense. But I think overall, for me, it's a success.
Well, yes.
And I thought I've always said that I think I helped myself a little bit by going in there. And I remember doing this right before it started. I cleared my head of expectation.
Yeah.
And I reminded myself a couple of things. I reminded myself I wasn't going to see Luke, Han, and Leia in the Millennium Falcon. And I think not enough people perhaps did that before it started. But the other thing is I, being somebody who is with the original trilogy crowd, I understand the whole notion of wanting to go in there and relive their childhood. But the problem was when we all went and saw those first three movies, back then we hadn't seen anything like that before. 16 years later, we'd seen our share of special effect, you know, high caliber special effect sci-fi movies and that sort of thing. So we weren't going to get the exact same experience anyway because it was a different time and we'd seen different movies leading up to that point. And we were a little older as well. And I think that made a difference in what I was able to come away with when seeing it.
Yeah, I think so. And you're also talking about, you know, Corey made the connection to The Force Awakens. It's impossible not to do it and try to keep it Phantom Menace focused. But I will say hype is such a powerful thing. And this trailer, the trailer for The Phantom Menace, to me, is still the greatest trailer of all time. When you first saw Darth Maul's lightsaber, of course, the internet was a hashtag burgeoning thing. So it wasn't out there like it was now. There weren't necessarily spoilers out there of, oh, someone found a Darth Maul action figure in a Toys R Us by mistake and reveals certain things. That didn't happen. So it was very refreshing and very unique in that sense. Sky, are you going to say something?
Yeah, I was thinking, do you guys remember, not only was that different, but you look at all the merchandise and everything that came out before even the movie was released for Force Awakens versus the big thing that everybody had to go get right before The Phantom Menace came out. I remember this because my wife figured out a way to get it for me. And it was, you know, the internet wasn't even as big as it is now, but it was like they had a t-shirt and a hat and they were both black and versus all the flair that t-shirts have now, it just literally just said Episode 1.
I remember that.
But that was still awesome because we just wanted to wear something with the new Star Wars movie on it. So we just, it was, even though it was that bland, we still all had to go get it.
It's true. Well, it's interesting too. I think as for Phantom Menace, like you said, the trailer, Dan, it's still a great trailer. I remember watching that online and getting chills from Darth Maul and the rousing John Williams score, and it was just like you were like, oh my gosh, this is happening, this is actually happening. You know, this is the same thing as like we said was Force Awakens, and it was just, I think it was a great time then to be a Star Wars fan.
I taped that on Entertainment Tonight. Watched.
I remember that.
Showed my family, and it was great. So the Phantom Menace. I've talked before on the coffee chat with Dennis Keithley that we had a few months ago about the impact that movie had and my immediate reactions, things like that. So they're out there if people want to listen to that. But I want to look more positively about things that worked in Episode 1. And Corey, let's start with you.
Sure. You know, it's weird because I have to go back and think about, you know, some of the things that I enjoyed as a film. I remember that first scene with Obi-Wan Kenobi and Qui-Gon Jinn sitting in that little conference room and waiting. And I thought, this is so cool. The Jedi, you know, I didn't expect, you know, these new characters. I guess like going in, I didn't know what to expect. So it was so cool to see new things, new characters, new Jedi, kind of a whole new time period of a time, you know, without war, I guess. And it was kind of rediscovering, you know, something we hadn't seen before. It was new characters, but in a sense that they were, I guess, older characters. So I think what worked was, the relationship some of these characters had, and how they, you know, kind of got along in these worlds and what the Jedi did. I think that was kind of cool how they were, you know, peacemakers and peacekeepers, you know, throughout the galaxy. And I tended to forget that just relying on my knowledge of, you know, Episodes 4, 5, and 6. And, you know, that was just really not really there and evident that they were just, you know, to such a force, to be able to deal with certain situations. And the other thing that worked too, I think, if we talk about the special effects, well, I mean, you know, it was such good special effects. I mean, riding along and this pod racer, I think that's one of the best sequences of its time because it's such a good way to put the person right in that driver's seat and have them feel all the bumps and shakes and explosions. And it's just it's such a good thing of showing you that George Lucas can, you know, tell a good story, but also have a good sequence of special effects mixed with characters and be able to work that into a point to where, you know, you're in there and you can't escape and you're literally into the film. So I think what also worked too, one more thing is the fact that the casting was done well. I thought the casting was really done well as far as some of the characters. I know people downplayed Jake Lloyd a little bit, but I've really come to enjoy him as an actor in this role because I think Dan and I have talked about this before, my own kids. I get excited because the way he reacts to things, the way his emotions come out are big things. And he's actually a very mature.
It was authentic. Eight-year-olds act that way. And I didn't get that at the time because I didn't have an eight-year-old. But it's true. I mean, he's a better actor than people give him credit for. Scott, what about you? Your overall impressions of Phantom Menace?
I mean, I know people aren't really big on the political components of it, the fact that this was all triggered by some political conflict regarding trade routes and taxation. I don't really have a problem with that because it just kind of had to start somewhere. Yeah,
it worked in its own context.
And I don't have a problem with that. I think it sets things up pretty well. I think it gave us really good visuals of things up to that point that we hadn't seen. We'd always heard about, you know, the days of the Jedi back when they were, you know, all over the place and protecting the galaxy and, you know, young Obi-Wan and Anakin and how they knew each other. And I think that was well represented. I love the music that John Williams did for episode one. Yeah. Is there anything that Liam Neeson can't do?
He can't say no to a film.
I love the character of Qui-Gon Jinn because I think he embodies everything that we would think a Jedi should be, you know, in the sense of just when he chose to do things, when he chose to use the Force, you know, the decisions he made. Proving that, you know, he was as righteous as a Jedi could be, but if he had to go against the Jedi Council or if he had to go against what other people said because he thought it was the right thing to do, he didn't mind doing that. I think the lightsaber battle, obviously, at the end has to be arguably one of the best, if not the best ones we've seen. Mm-hmm. And obviously, a lot of that has to do with the fact that it was such a frantic pace, but yet so well choreographed. And I agree about Jake Lloyd, you know, because here's why I think you can. Here's a couple of reasons why I think you can defend Jake Lloyd, because at the end of the day, you hate looking at seeing this, knowing that this kid's going to become because he's so kind and so generous and so willing to help and, you know, so full of youthful energy. And it's just so tough to think what that kid's going to become down the road. And you see some of the things early on that are going to contribute to his turning, ranging from being a slave, being called a slave, having to miss his mother, being told that he's not going to be trained as a Jedi, losing his mentor. And I think Jake handles all that just fine. I also think that, you know, with all the criticism he got, the other thing that has to be remembered is, you know, he went through a long, strenuous audition process. And by the time he did it, you know, he was still a little kid. And I mean, I'm sorry, I don't care who you are. If George Lucas calls and asks you if you want to play a little Darth Vader, you're going to say yes. And the rest is history, you know? So I think there's defense of Jake. And I know too that, and I can understand some of the reasons why people are not fond of Jar Jar. There are some places where I think Jar Jar could be kind of leveled back a little bit, but Jar Jar is still very relevant to the story. And I remind people this a lot, that he does fit into the mythology model of playing the fool, but he is also very key in bringing the Naboo and the Gungans together for the greater good. And if he doesn't exist, that doesn't happen. Something as simple as when he's walking through Tatooine and decides to, you know, eat that thing hanging from the you know, the food area, and, you know, spits it out, and then Sebulba attacks him. Well, if that doesn't happen, then Anakin doesn't approach the team.
That's right. So, who knew the Mos Espa food court would be so important?
Exactly. So, it's true. So there you go.
I love that. Very, very insightful way, both of you, of course. And thank you for answering what works in episode one, even though I asked overall impressions twice. But that's what happens when you're recording and your kids come down and have a conversation with you in the middle of a podcast. But that's okay. And I agree. I mean, the number one thing for me about episode one is Qui-Gon Jinn. He's wonderful. He's the mentor that Anakin needs. He's a mentor that Obi-Wan needs. He's a mentor that fans need. He's such a powerful soul with a very unique approach to being a Jedi Knight, what that means to be a Jedi. And I like the fact that he doesn't want to be on the council because he has a different approach and his approach works. He's a very powerful, charismatic figure, and he's got a lot to say. In fact, I still quote him pretty regularly. It's a lot of things that he says, especially feel, don't think, use your instincts. He's got a lot going on for him that enhances his film in many ways. Of course, Darth Maul in the fight, and really not much more needs to be said about that. Other than that, it probably is, as Scott said, if not the best fight in Star Wars, one of the best fights, period, in action films in any way, shape, or form. A lot of that is Ray Park, but it's also the choreography of Nick Gilliard and how athletic, you know, Ewan McGregor and Liam Neeson are. And it's really a stunning piece of filmmaking. The music is wonderful. And the big thing, and I'm tying this into our next question, and there was a blog about it on stars.com written by a guy that's a teacher. Just check it out. But the film says a lot about loyalty, friendship, family, and working together. All important themes that I think, gentlemen, are really important for us as a culture, for us as filmgoers, for us in our Star Wars community. What about those things, loyalty, friendship, family, and working together, work so well in The Phantom Menace? And Corey, let's just start with you.
Sure. You know, you're bringing these type of things up. I can't not think of The Phantom Menace not hitting each of them all in stride. You know, with loyalty and friendship, I think of Qui-Gon Jinn and Obi-Wan Kenobi, just their partnership and how they play off each other. And their friendship is so strong. You can tell that they're not just master and Padawan. There's something that a bond there, which sets the groundwork, obviously, for his, Obi-Wan Kenobi's connection to Anakin. And it's just you're working, like you said, you're working from such a great master to be able to carry on that tradition. And then, of course, you know, you talk about family and Anakin and his mother. It's a stressed connection, but you can see the love there, too, and their longing to move forward and hope for better things and looking for that next chance. And you ache for them because of their situation and the way they are. And, but you know, I think back to that scene where he has to leave his mother and you just like, that's one of the most heartbreaking things you can think of as being a father myself, for my kids to have to go off to, a friend's house even, or, you know, off to school or, and whatever they may be doing, it's, you have that little piece of you go with you, and it's again setting the groundwork for, you know, future things to come. And I think that's so beautiful the way that George put it that way, because he plays all that up into the original films as well. So, you know, and then like you mentioned earlier, Scott, with Jar Jar, he works together. He's a bumbling fool, but he's there to support as friendship, to give respect and that comes a long way. I mean, I think too, the whole film itself ties together so well on that side of things. And then of course, you know, it falls apart in the later films, in 2 and 3. So it says something that these films, you know, and the saga itself have always had the tradition of running with these themes of loyalty and friendship and family. And it just shines through in this film.
Scott, what about you?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with the loyalty dynamic between Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan, especially after Qui-Gon dies. You know, because at one point in time, Obi-Wan is questioning, you know, hey, do you really want to go against the council again? Mm-hmm. You know, and are, you know, they sense it. Why can't you? But even though he disagreed later on, he apologized for it. And then later on, he kind of picks up Qui-Gon's mantle and goes against the council and says, I'll go against you if I have to, out of loyalty for Qui-Gon, which I thought was definitely a good representation of loyalty. And as far as Anakin and Shmi are concerned, you know, really the thing that stands out for me is Shmi is that classic, you know, is the quintessential mom that just wants a better life for her son, even if it means he has to leave at a lot earlier age than most kids leave. And that is one of the things that makes it kind of a good moment and a sad moment when he walks away. And you can see that on her face when he leaves, that on the one hand, she's glad he's getting away from that life, but he's also having to leave her. And the other thing that I really love is the moment when the Gungans and the Naboo decide to work together for the greater good. And I just like how it all kind of comes together. The moment where Padme says, you know, even though we haven't always agreed, we've managed to live in peace. And you even hear Boss Nass go, ah,
that was a good one.
As if to say, you know, that's a really good point, because, you know, it's so easy to focus on the disagreements. But then that moment that Padme is the one that points out, you know, yeah, we have disagreements, but we've always managed to coexist. And now we need to take that a step further in order to save our world. And I think that, too, was a very powerful moment as far as loyalty and people working together.
Yeah, the Jar Jar thing is really important here for a lot of reasons. And as I've said before, people who grew up with this film love Jar Jar Binks unapologetically. Even as they get into their late teens, early 20s, they still love him. He's a very important figure because he embodies what it means to have people from different walks of life coming together to accomplish goodness. I mean, this is a metaphor that's played out in real life and in many historical battles of significance throughout the globe, and not to mention the fact that the Jedi Council is diverse and they come together for causes. And whether the causes work out or not, there's still good there. There's still intention there. There's so much loyalty between Jedi Knight and Padawan and the Republic. And there's a lot of power in these families that are developed through these interactions. It's not just a blood family. There's a lot of spirituality in these families. They're from different backgrounds. Padme, Anakin, Jar Jar, Qui-Gon, R2-D2. They all come from different places, but they become a surrogate family. And I think that's important, especially in a day and age when that is very much a reality and it's the norm. And I think it speaks volumes about that. This movie has a legacy, gentlemen. What kind of legacy do you both think The Phantom Menace has left behind for us? And Scott, let's start with you.
Well, I mean, I think it stands really as one of many key moments to come from that point on, where new generations of Star Wars fandom was beginning. And that's why there's so much discussion about, you know, which one's better than the other and what works for one audience and the other and what doesn't. Is it was really kind of the start of what would become from that point on new generations of Star Wars fandom, and coming into Star Wars at a different age and experiencing it very much like we did the first time around, but obviously under, you know, a different time and different circumstances. I think that's really one of the biggest legacies it leaves, because it, you know, had two more films, and then we had animated shows, and then now we have everything that's led up to this point. And from that point on, there's been even more Star Wars fans that have entered Star Wars at a different point. And The Phantom Menace was kind of the start of that, because, you know, outside of the original trilogy and some books, that was about it. There was really no new place to go into Star Wars for any new generations. And I think The Phantom Menace was a key starting point for that. And, you know, I think it's just a good film to look back on how this all started. I mean, if you're willing to accept it for what it is, and you're willing to accept the fact that it is how it all started, I think it can work for you that way. Because I do think it does everything that it's supposed to do. Maybe not always as well as others, but I mean, I do think it works as a starting point for many of the things that we go on to see in the other films.
Yeah, that's well said, Scott. And like you mentioned too, it's everybody has their favorite film, I think. as far as a legacy, those folks who grew up with that and that was the first Star Wars film they saw, I think they're going to always look back to that point in time and that being their first Star Wars movie. You know, whether they liked it or not, it's a starting point. And I think as it leaves a legacy as it is, I mean, like you said, we wouldn't have more films, we wouldn't have more merchandise and more Star Wars stuff to consume. I think it really kicked off a new age of filmmaking. I think it was really just like the original films did. It really kind of, I don't want to say reinvented certain aspects, but you know, as far as special effects go, they were kind of stretching limits there. I think a little bit, looking for new ways to do technology and practical effects as well, mixed into, you know, this new time frame, this new era we live in, as far as filmmaking goes. But you know, I think as a film itself, the legacy that it has for it, I think it's. It has to be what it is, and you have to take it for what it is, because that and its place is the way it kept things moving. And I think that's, I mean, you can call back things of, I would think, some of the things that we see in other films of just the story it tells, I think, too, like we mentioned, as far as relationships and friendships and building trust in one another. I think there's still those kind of latitudes there as far as a film itself, and not, you know, taking out the sci-fi adventure film, but there's a lot of attitudes in there that work together as a good film to work on themes and to analyze and things like that. But I think I hope that once, you know, we see Force Awakens, that we'll be able to call back to, oh yeah, you know, way back in episode one, this happened or that happened. There's little, you know, winks and nods and things like that. I think that'll just enhance even more. So as things go further on and fans get to know the films better, wherever they may be in their fandom, they can go and rewatch this film and enjoy it well as well.
And for me, the legacy of The Phantom Menace is that it reignited Star Wars for an entire generation of people. And I don't think we have The Clone Wars without The Phantom Menace. I don't think we have Rebels without The Phantom Menace. And it's conceivable that we don't have The Force Awakens without The Phantom Menace. I that one I'm not as sure about as far as statements go. But it certainly has reignited Star Wars for a multitude of people, students of mine, cousins, nephews of mine. They all love Star Wars. And a lot of the reasons are not because of Han, Luke, and Leia, but because of Anakin and Obi-Wan and Yoda. And that's all because of The Phantom Menace, which for all the ups and downs that it has, I know when it came out, I saw it 9 times in the theater. It's been one that I... Obviously, when I watch the prequels, I don't know why it's obvious, but to me it's obvious. When I watch the prequels, Revenge of the Sith is my go-to, but my second go-to is Phantom Menace, and a lot of that is for the reasons I said before. So, Scott, thank you again so much. You've helped all of us here at the Coffee with Kenobi family get even more excited for The Force Awakens with your blogs for Coffee with Kenobi and for your amazing stellar work on Assembly of Geeks. So if you would, tell us about the great things that you have going on, including a very exciting interview.
Yes. Before I do, can I make one more comment about The Phantom Menace?
Yeah, do.
Wasn't it cool at one point in time in that film that both Emperor Palpatine and General Zod were standing right next to each other?
That's right. That's a lethal duo.
Yeah, so we have a lot of great discussions continuing on Assembly of Geeks. Comic Book Noob continues to do well. We've been trying to cover characters that are on TV. We just recently did Supergirl and Jessica Jones. So people that, you know, have been watching that and wonder, well, how do I go and read comics on these people now that I'm totally into them? We help people with that sort of thing. And our last one of the year is going to be on Peggy Carter and Madame Mask, who is the villain in season 2 of Agent Carter. And as people may know, we do a podcast dedicated to that show called the Peggy Carter Podcast. And to kind of get everybody ready for that, on December 21st, as part of the Peggy Carter Podcast, I am going to post my interview with Haley Atwell. And in that interview, we talked a little bit about the experience of being what it's like to be Agent Carter and in season 1 and in season 2. We talk a lot about the way that she's inspired fans and the whole association with the phrase, I know my value and the importance of that. It's a really, really good discussion. I think people are going to like it a lot. Originally, that was going to be our preview show, so we were going to mix it into our preview for the series, but they've pushed the season premiere of Agent Carter to the 19th. Originally, it was the 5th, and now it's the 19th. So what we've decided to do is we're still going to run the interview on December 21st, and then we'll run a preview show the week prior. But we've been promoting the interview for weeks that we were going to run on the 21st, and I thought it was good to go ahead and stick with that. So
well, that's great.
Yep, that's and, coming up.
And kudos to you. I mean, that is a major feather in your cap. You're one of the hardest working people in podcasting today. So I'm so happy for you and proud of you because this is amazing, and I cannot wait to hear it. So as always, thank you so much for lending your time and talents to Coffee with Kenobi, both as your guest appearances and as a blogger and just being a great voice and fandom. We thank you so much and look forward to hearing your reactions to The Force Awakens.
I can't wait to share them because that means I've seen it.
Right.
I'm looking forward to that too. And I always appreciate the invite. I love coming on and you're some of my favorite people to talk Star Wars with. So it's always a pleasure. And I look forward to when we get to do it again, especially regarding the new Star Wars film. So you all keep up the good work.
Thank you, my friend. Have a wonderful evening, and we'll talk to you soon.
Okay, you too.
More to add, do you?
We received a really great discussion email in the Phantom Menace that I want to read to you, everybody, from Adam Bakash, and he says, and he starts with a quote, "You're going to find that many of the truths we cling to depend greatly on our own point of view." And he continues to write, "I do believe that our perceptions of the prequels do depend greatly on our own point of view. I was blessed to be a young child when the original trilogy was released in theaters. That put me at nearly the age of Anakin when Episode 1 was released. Looking back, I couldn't be happier that I was able to experience all of Star Wars on the big screen for the first time, and to be the same age as the main character of the saga walking into Episode 1. I never felt bitter towards the prequels. They have always held the same weight to me as the originals. When the first teaser was released for The Phantom Menace, it brought me right back to that excitement I felt when I was a young child. Shortly after seeing the trailer, I found the Coffee with Kenobi podcast and really enjoyed the Ring Theory and Defending the Prequels discussions. It allowed me to revisit those films as both a recent college graduate and a child of the prequels. I think that Episode 1 only works if you completely accept it. Jar Jar is not my favorite character, but I accept him as necessary to the success of the story and as an unlikely aid to our heroes. Midichlorians are not the most pivotal look at the Force, but I accept that in a peak time for the Jedi, there must be a scientific and logical explanation of the Force. More importantly, I accept that whether I like it or not, this is the origin of the saga. It is from this place of acceptance I can truly become lost in the Star Wars universe. It's easy to get lost in the barrage of negativity associated with Episode 1. There are some truly shining moments in the movie. There are a few scenes I still see from the eyes of my 8-year-old self and every single time. Our first meeting with Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan using their lightsabers in the Force in the opening scene still evoke memories of awe, as this was the first time we saw the Jedi in their prime. Watching Qui-Gon's characterization on Tatooine gave us much to reflect on regarding his maverick Jedi persona. Who doesn't love seeing a wise Jedi use every trick in his book to allow the will of the Force to unfold, amidst having no choice but to meet Watto in the grimy gambling culture? Though there is lots of gripe regarding these films, I think everyone can agree that the pod race and a duel of fates challenged all of us with what was possible in this universe. Scaling back from character moments, if you allow yourself to accept that as Star Wars without complaints, this movie has some of the most incredible landscapes to become immersed in. Naboo, Coruscant, and the Gungan city are captivating every single time. I am deeply thankful to have grown up in an age of Star Wars where I got to see every movie for the first time in theaters. I plan to bring the same level of acceptance to Episode 7 with as little formed opinions as possible. I hope to step into this new era of Star Wars with no entitlement, but the same childlike awe paired with deep enjoyment and contemplation and discussion surrounding a galaxy far, far away. Thank you, Corey and Dan, for providing such fun and stimulating conversations regarding the Star Wars universe. And that's from Adam Bakash. And Adam, what a beautiful, lovely sentiment. So well done. And that's practically the thesis of what we try to do with our show anyway. Just accept it, become immersed in it, and just enjoy it for what it is. It's kind of a lot to appeal to a lot of different people from different walks of life, different generations. And I love it. And congratulations, by the way, on your recent college graduation.
Absolutely. And I just him talking about the film in these paragraphs here, it makes me want to go back and watch the film itself and relive those moments, because there's so many, you know, like it or hate it, I mean, there's so many good moments. I think they outdo the bad moments or things that aren't necessarily our favorite. I mean, there's things from other films that are not necessarily my favorite. You know, I'm not a big Crystal Skull fan of Indiana Jones. So
what?
So it's it, but you know, it, I think the discussion and through fandom and through just enjoying the film for what it is and just, you know, on that level, be able to we come back with fresh eyes or, you know, like you said, seek out a conversation of the film that maybe opens your eyes to it a new way, and be able to watch the film again with a new set of ideas or point of view, like he started with there. Very good, Adam. Thank you very much.
Well, and this is neat too. Adam made me realize that mm-hmm. episode one has a lot in common with Harry Potter, because he said he was the same age as Jake Lloyd. So he was the same age as Anakin, so we grew up with him. And then so many people who like the Harry Potter books and movies, they grew up with Harry Potter as he aged and went to school the next year. So did they. So that's – I never thought about that, but that's another reason why there's that generation loves episode one so much. It makes perfect sense. Our topic for show number 49 is The Force Awakens. Finally, after a 32-year wait – we have a brand new Star Wars film to talk about, which takes place after Return of the Jedi. And we are bringing our Coffee with Kenobi podcasting family into the coffee shop for a closer look at this exciting new film. Be sure to send us an email or an MP3 with your thoughts, comments, questions, and opinions to feedback@coffeewithkenobi.com.
I like the sound of that.
Echo 3 to Echo 7. Hano, buddy, you read me?
I saw part of the message. You...
I seem to have found it.
Our first email comes from Adam, and he says, "Hey, guys, my first Now Legends book I read was Jedi Academy Trilogy from Kevin J. Anderson. It was my first big boy book that I read. I was well into Star Wars already, and there came out of the dark, quote-unquote, dark times. It was a perfect mix of new Jedi, old, as well as some great bad guys. It was strange back then to get a female Admiral, Dalia, but she was such a great and intense character. The main story was amazing. Luke building a new academy and traveling to the stars, finding a new applicants. It was a perfect way to continue the saga. I was hoping this whole black box thing may contain something similar, where Luke is maybe building the new academy and lets them loose in episode 8. I was hoping this is where Luke had been, cutting himself off from the galaxy and only appearing when it seems all light had been extinguished. Anyways, I thought I'd share how much these books affected me as a kid. Even talking about them now makes me want to read them again, even about the superweapon contained within. Keep up the great work. All the best, and Adam, and his handle is Das Really Cool, with a really being a W. Thanks, Adam, for the email there. And I don't remember if I've read any of the Jedi Academy books. I think I may have, but it's really a flutter in my own mind.
I listened to half of the first one on audio on a cassette.
Ooh.
If that tells you that I'm 100, I'm actually not. But it's I actually didn't like that one. It bugged me because of the stuff with Han and Chewie. But that's really not that important. What is important is that it spoke to Adam.
Sure.
And it perpetuated his fandom, and it meant something to him. And that's what matters. And that's what we talked about with Randy and Lou from Legends Library.
Yeah.
And that's cool. And I do want to give a real quick a shout out to Randy for filling in and jumping in on Rebels Reactions with Aaron. He's done a great job. Oh, yeah. Those two. It's been so fun. I mean, I do miss doing Rebels Reactions a little bit, but it's so fun for me as a fan and a listener to hear those guys talk about Rebels Reactions. So thank you guys for doing that. And thank you, Adam, for writing in and telling us what speaks to you about the Legends line. Adam actually has been a good supporter of our show. He sent me a pretty cool figure a few months ago.
Wow.
And he sent us some Periscope. He was Periscope with us for the Magic Kingdom meetup, so that was fun too. For our next email, I want to point out, I've been talking to a friend of ours from Ranker.com, and they've got this cool website where they just do all kinds of polls, and you can weigh in on your opinions on different topics, which, of course, we really like here. And they have a Star Wars section that's nice. And right now you've got stuff like things you should know about Star Wars, The Force Awakens, the best Star Wars movies ranked by fans, opinions on Harrison Ford, ranking all the Star Wars trailers, stuff about George Lucas and, in their words, what he's done to make up for the prequels. So, I mean, so there are various degrees of the categories. And you may find yourself gravitating towards more topics than others, but it's interesting, a good place to find some discussion. So feel free to check them out and let us know what you think, and reach out to the guys at Ranker and tell them hello, because they've done a lot of hard work and have a lot of different ways. And you know, sample sizes of surveys being what they are, it gives you a bit of an idea of where Star Wars fans are with particular topics. If you don't, or if you aren't on Twitter, or even if you are, something to add to the conversation. Statistics speak aloud to a lot of people. So it's interesting stuff here.
Yeah, it just promotes discussion, I think, too. You know, for just getting, you know, you always think of those ranking things as far as your own personal rankings of films or characters or whatnot. You know, and these guys have put together a lot of work as far as, you know, anything from some, you know, photos to trivia or things like that. And it's just a matter of you know, everybody kind of getting on and, you know, ranking their favorite parts of their favorite, you know, pop culture things or TV shows or geek culture or whatnot. So kudos to you guys for putting this together, and it looks like a lot of fun.
From Topps comes the all-new digital card collecting app, free to download from iTunes or Google Play, Star Wars Card Trader.
For the first time ever, collect and trade everything from legendary 1977 Star Wars cards to new cards featuring exclusive content from Star Wars Episode 7, The Force Awakens.
All from the comfort of your mobile devices, Star Wars Card Trader.
These are the cards you're looking for.
Chewie, get us out of here!
If you would like to respond to our question of the show, have a comment, or just want to say hello, send us an email or MP3 at feedback@coffeewithkenobi.com. Or if you have a specific question or comment for either of us individually, email us at danz@coffeewithkenobi.com or coreyc@coffeewithkenobi.com, or visit us at coffeewithkenobi.com and click on the Contact Us section or comment on one of the stories featured on the site. If you enjoy the show, please write a review in iTunes or Stitcher. You can also like the show on Facebook at facebook.com/coffeewithkenobi, as well as keep up to date at our Twitter feed @coffeewithkenobi. You can also find us on Tumblr at coffeewithkenobi.tumblr.com. If you enjoy the jazz music, the album is Eye to Eye by Steve Torak.
Give the evacuation code signal.
That's it for show number 48 of Coffee with Kenobi. A huge thank you to Scott Murray for joining us and for discussing The Phantom Menace. Be sure to listen to the Assembly of Geeks for the latest geek discussions.
A special shout out to Dennis Keithley, Andrew Sauce, Neil Lowry, Mediocre Jedi, Mike Winder, Aaron Harris, Mike Sutter, Torpedo Ted, Jesse, and Mike Audette for their contributions to our Coffee with Kenobi Patreon page. By supporting our Patreon page, you too can win a coffee chat of your own. Check out our webpage or show notes for more information. You can also support our show through our Amazon.com, Fandango, Cufflinks.com, and Her Universe affiliate links on our site. Thank you for your generosity to our show, Coffee with Kenobi. Thank you for your generosity to our Coffee with Kenobi family.
Thanks also to Rob of the Bearded Trio, media specialist Lisa Dullard, our Coffee with Kenobi bloggers, everyone who contributed to this show, and to all of you out there who listen to and email Coffee with Kenobi. Don't forget to send us your comments and opinions on a topic for show number 49, The Force Awakens.
This is the podcast you're looking for.
This podcast is not endorsed by the Walt Disney Company or Lucasfilm Limited. It is intended for entertainment and informational purposes only. The official Star Wars website can be found at www.starwars.com. Star Wars, all names, sounds, and any other Star Wars related items are registered trademarks and or copyrights of Disney and their respective trademark and copyright holders. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of Coffee with Kenobi unless otherwise indicated.
There's no one here. Move along.